Hi, I'm Eric Topol, Editor-in-Chief of Medscape, and I'm really pleased to welcome today Donna Sprout Metz from USC, and we're going to be talking about your program and mobile health and obesity. So maybe we can start off, Donna, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the whole idea of working in mobile connected health.
Sure. So my background is in obesity research, predominantly pediatric obesity, childhood obesity. And a long time ago, before there was the word mobile health, I was doing an in-lab study, bringing people in, children, overweight Hispanic kids and African-American kids, into our lab where they had 2 days of after-school exercise and nutrition classes and motivational interviewing. And we collected data like good researchers, pre and post the intervention. And as this intervention unrolled, and I'm on the ground, I'm in the trenches with these kids, and I realized that we have all this data on them that we could be using, but we don't even look at it until the trial is over. And not only that, as I was interviewing one of the kids, doing the motivational interviewing with her, and we're doing this randomized controlled trial, so everybody's got to get the same treatment, and I know she's about to head in to a full hour about sugar-sweetened beverages and why they're bad. And I've just spoken with her, and I know she doesn't drink them. She has other vices. Oops. Flaming Hot Cheetos, but not sugar-sweetened beverages. And I think we're going to lose this kid, and we're not using the data that we have. Mm-hmm. And they're wearing accelerometers on the first and last week. We could be having that data all the time. There's got to be a better way. And that's what's got me started.
So that was the impetus to bring in mobile mm-hmm. data collection from real world and these kids sort of representing minorities.
Right.
And what have you learned from this?
The kids that I work with love the real-time attention. So when we intervene on them using real-time new technologies, they are in communication with us. So one of my interventions that was real-time, what we call a just-in-time adaptive intervention, just-in-time because it's in context, which is so important. It's when you need it. So intervening on these kids' sedentary behavior, not having them come in and say, you must be less sedentary. But feeling, you know, sensing that they've been sedentary for a certain amount of time and texting them, letting them know that it's time.
Now, do you have to give them a smartphone? Or
it depends. Some of the research we're doing now, we use own phones, so they've got to have an Android phone, for instance, to be in a particular study. And others, we give them phones. We also deployable sensors in the home to try and understand behavior in context, also in the context of the family.
Now, recently there was a study you may have seen in Cell Metabolism where the Salk Institute here in La Jolla, they made up an app where it would basically help to collect all the food that one eats during the day. Mm-hmm. And they found that people eat all day long, not just in three mm-hmm. meals, and particularly in the evening. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a way to be able to passively detect people ingest?
So, that is, in obesity research, I would say the wicked question.
That's the holy grail that's missing?
That's the holy grail. So there are a number of different efforts around that. The best measure we have, really, well, there are two. There is doubly labeled water, in which you drink isotope labeled water, and then you give me all of your pee for the next 10 days. That's fun, and kids love it. No. And also, it really gives us energy in, energy out, but we don't know what they're eating.
So right.
Then there's, right after that, gold standard is 3-day dietary recall, which is unreliable at best, because people either, you know, it's not so much that they lie, but they don't remember what they ate, they don't know what was in the food, even if we call them with the best dietitian support for 3 days, they're not reliable, and after it's downhill from there. So a couple of labs, Carol Boucher's group in Hawaii and Ming Sun's group in Pittsburgh have been, in particular, and others too, but those are the two main people, trying to do photo capture and then machine learning recognition of the food on the plate. I think it's a rabbit hole.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Well, let's hope that someday that technology will evolve. I've seen some things like trying to look at conductance of tissue. And I mean, people are definitely trying it. But as you say, this is kind of a real difficult feature.
Well, the question is, I'm beginning to think, do we need to know? I mean, to understand the metabolism, it's important to know what people eat.
Right.
Exactly what they eat. But then you might want to do a controlled feeding study. But to understand and change behavior, we might not need to know that. I don't know.
Well, that, I did want to get into that with you, Donna, about changing behavior, the ultimate challenge. The hope is that through mobile connectivity, mm-hmm. that there would be feedback loops, and there exactly. would be a new way to yes. intervene with not just that you get some data on mm-mm. things like activity, and, but also you would have the ability to gamify it, mm-hmm. to have managed competitions, to have with peers and neighbors, Facebook mm-hmm. friends, whatever, mm-hmm. and that you would, you know, even be able to incentivize it, whether it's mm-hmm. with finances or other means. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we're going to be able to crack the case? Obviously, obesity is such a dominant problem, and, mm-hmm. and it's horrible to see the mm-hmm. rate in children. But could this be a way, with these other tools that are on top of smartphone connectivity, to try to tackle, finally, the behavioral issue?
I think only a smartphone will never be enough. It's just a gadget.
Right.
So it needs to be smart. It needs to have some good artificial and real intelligence behind it. I think that it'll always be a combination of smartphones and sensors, either wearable or deployable, so that we know what people are doing and can adapt in real time to their personal needs. It's personalized. It's precision behavioral medicine is what we're getting, what we can do now in real time with these technologies. Do I think gamification will help? I don't know. So I've developed some games. I've worked in that field.
Especially with kids, you would think.
Developing a good game is really hard. But it's got to be darn slick before it's going to work, and it has to be, and even Angry Birds, at some point people get tired of it. I think gamification has something else to offer that's very cool, though. And that is, you can use it as a tool to teach kids things without having to test them.
Or feeling that they're having to go through educational
maneuvers.
You can
just watch what they're doing on the back end, and once you can sort that out from game mechanics and how well they play it, you can see where they're struggling and when they're not struggling.
Right. And what about the managed co-opetition with other kids and other peers?
So
is that a strategy that you're onto?
I'm not sure competition is always the way to go. I think it's good for some people some of the time.
Right.
In adults, Bonnie Spring has done some really great work in that, where it's anonymized. You have teams, but it's not necessarily, you don't really know who's on the team. I think it can work for kids. It has to be done really well. It
hasn't been tested yet, right?
Well, you can't test it. When you start talking about mobile health and embedding games and competitions, it's all in how you do it and what the other things are that are surrounding it. So if I make a terrible intervention and competition's in it and that doesn't seem to help, is competition no good? Or, you know, what elements? That's where some of Linda Collins' work, looking at like fractional factorial designs of what works and what doesn't within the context of a larger intervention, is important.
Right,
so
right.
I can't give you a good answer on that.
What about the other factors that are not necessarily captured well today? We talked about the actual ingestion of food,
mm-hmm.
but sleep and other environmental factors mm-hmm. that we don't do so well at actually quantifying or even capturing at any level. What do you think about that?
I think we're getting there with sleep. So the Lullaby System, I love their work. I forget their names, but I like the deployable systems. I think some of the sensors that are combined sensors in your room and a wrist-worn sensor can work. It's not going to give you all of the things that you can get with a really deep sleep monitoring, but I think it's going to give you enough to know where kids fail or grown-ups fail, and where what's disrupting their sleep. So a lot of the things that I really like about the new sensing modalities for sleeping is that they take context into account.
Well, I've seen one that's actually pretty extraordinary because it compares favorably with polysomnography. So the ones that are under the mattress and just detecting gross movements
are not necessarily
very accurate.
No.
But I think you're right. I think that's going to be something that could mm-hmm. be integrated.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems we have today with mobile apps is mm-hmm. that they're all each developed, you know, one at one-offs, and we haven't really gotten the master integrative dashboard mm-hmm. and the virtual coach and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, over time, that's going to be the way this evolves. Now, let's talk about the bigger picture. We have a massive problem of diabetes, and I'm not sure if the data really indicate we're making any headway. What's going to finally get our arms around this serious problem of epidemic proportion?
So I think I'm just going to go back to what you said about sleep. It's an environment that we live in, and we live in time and we live in context. That's what makes mobile technology so great, because they can capture all of that. So I think we are beginning to get a handle on it, because it's not still going up, although on the very, very tip of it, the morbid obesity is going up. But we've sort of stopped the flow a little bit, stopped the bleeding. I do think we can get a handle on it. If I didn't think that, I would do something else with my life.
Have you been discouraged over the years?
I'm always discouraged.
Okay.
I'm always encouraged. I think we can.
Okay.
I think the tipping point is going to be understanding not only the interpersonal, inter-individual variability, how I interact with you. So we have this neat new study that NSF just funded looking at using deployable sensors in the home to understand family interactions in the families with obese children around eating. Using some simple beacons placed around the home, so I can give you some examples. Also, a phone and a wearable that will be able to tell us eating behavior, just eating episodes. I don't care what you're eating right now. I just want to know if you're eating. I want to know if you're eating, if you're stressed, and if you're angry.
Right.
I want to know if you're alone. I want to know who you're with.
So the sensors, besides the ones that are in the phone, you mean you have things on the refrigerator and the pantry?
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime it's opened up, you're sensing
and
that?
And I know who it is.
And you know who it is. Yeah. You have a unique identifier.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're kind of watching, at least at some level, habits and behavioral things, right?
And it's that whole cascade of interactions around eating, which we, you know, the funny thing is, to come back to the wicked question, we don't yet know what people are eating. We know that they're eating too much sugar. We know in general what's wrong with the American diet. But on the individual level in time, it's very hard to know. But
what about the kid who says, I don't know. I don't want Dr. Donna Sprout Metz to know what I'm eating. So I'm going to have my sister go into the pantry and the refrigerator to get the food for me, to bring it to me and game the system. Are we going to have that kind of issue from sensors that are not really, you know, granular enough?
It is always possible to game the system. I'm working with a couple of really smart engineers from the University of Virginia. And I'm pretty sure they'll have some fail-safes.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, I think you're bringing up many central points here, the kind of evolution of sensors as they get more and more refined and informative and highly accurate and really pinpoint. And you've also brought up where the holes are, whether it's the context, whether it's the inability to really at this point track actual food ingestion. And you also really provocatively mentioned, well, maybe that's not so important after all. We can get all these other pieces in there.
So the reason that it might not be important is because how well have our messages done about you should eat less sugar, or substitute sugar with this, or you should eat less saturated fat? How well have we done with those messages? Not fantastically well.
Right.
And we seem to stumble from one diet to another. And I remember when we first immigrated back to the United States, it was the low saturated fat was so important. No fat. Fat was bad. So we were driving across country, and we go and buy a low-fat muffin, and it's like 900 calories of refined
disgustingness. And then you get hungry a few minutes later.
Right. I think we need to know it, because we need to know the mechanisms and how the metabolism deals with those foods. That's something else entirely. But I don't know if those messages are helping us intervene. I think what we do know from behavior change and psychology is that we do know that stress at the meal, for instance, stress during mealtime will make many people eat too much or too fast, or both. And we can intervene on that, certainly now that we have these real-time technologies. So,
One other question is the selection of the kids into your studies. So it isn't truly random, that is, the ones who you can find that want to be in these studies, right? And are you selecting out a group that is potentially not representative?
Yeah. I mean,
is that a problem?
Yeah, but show me a research that doesn't have that problem.
Well, I mean, the only way that people have gotten around this of late is by getting to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, through, you know, passive data collection.
Right, but then...
And that has the potential to override some of the concerns when you're doing smaller studies that require active participation, yeah. and just the fact that you're participating selects out people that potentially yeah. are have plasticity in their yeah. behavior. So I don't know. I just bring it up because I wanted to get your views.
Yeah.
I understand fully that this is not easy, and it's far better than not studying it. It's always just one of those things to acknowledge as a potential limitation.
It is a potential limitation. I serve the underserved. I work with predominantly low-income African-American and Hispanic families and kids. Do we get everyone in that we try and recruit? No. I can, you know, published articles with recruitment trees. It's very difficult.
It's clinical research in academia.
That is clinical research in academia. Do I see a hope for changing that with the precision medicine and the new cohorts coming down the line, coming down the pike? I think to some extent, mobile recruitment is going to help us.
Right.
But for any study that requires intensive measurement, directed measurement, and informed consent, there's always going to be some kind of selection bias.
Right.
And I feel really strongly that much as having all this, we're all so excited about big data. I'm excited about big data. And we're all so excited about the data that's just kind of laying around waiting for us to use it, like Fitbit data. But the data doesn't have directed data collection, and it can't answer some of the most important scientific questions.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's a really good point to finish, in that there's, no matter which way we go, there's always issues that we have to keep in the center of our thoughts, because there is no perfect way to assay what's really going on and to change it.
Yeah.
So, Donna, thanks so much for joining us on Medscape One-on-One. And thanks to you. I'm really glad we had the chance together to explore such an important topic about childhood obesity and the use of mobile sensors as a potential way to understand it better and in the future intervene to try to get a better handle on what is a very serious public health problem. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.